This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with the Wells Tech Podcast, episode 409. That's 409 for Tuesday, September 8th, 2015. We meet every Tuesday afternoon, talk about technology and ministry, and that person that I meet with on a regular basis and saw her just the other day, just this past weekend, is Sally Draper. Hi, Sally. How are you?
I am awesome, Martin. How are you this afternoon?
Excellent. Excellent. It was good chatting with you over the weekend. I was up in your neck of the woods. My brother-in-law was being installed at Nicolette, Trinity Lutheran, just down the street from you guys. So you
That's right.
Good enough to join for the installation. Glad to see you there.
Yeah, it was a beautiful service. My goodness. A lot of musical talent in your family, it seems, Martin, and they all showed up to help out. It was wonderful.
They sing, they play trumpets, they play clarinets. I mean, it's all good. It was kind of mini Synod convention style. It's nice.
Yeah, very much. I talked to a lot of people afterwards that felt like that was a mountaintop kind of service. So wonderful way to start his ministry there at Trinity, and we wish him all the best. That's Pastor Dan Witte, and look forward to having him closer here to the MLC family and his wife actually working on campus. So
yeah.
Lots of good benefits from their move already.
Neat. Well, we have our summer series in the rearview mirror, so to speak. Imagine that, where we talked all things photography, from stock images to taking pictures to editing photos to printing to storing and finding. That was kind of fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, I learned a lot along the way, and we made some really great connections with our Wells Tech Photo Challenge. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show, though.
Very good. So we are embarking on a new series of sorts, and normally throughout the fall, winter, spring months, we select a book and we read the book together, and we invite our listeners to do the same, and we do a review. So we take a chapter or two at a time, and we've covered some really interesting topics over the years talking through some of these books and book reviews. We're doing something a little bit different this time, aren't we, Sally?
We are, and we're not going to talk about whose idea this was, but as we were looking for a book, we didn't really have something that was burning for us to read this time around. There wasn't anything that had jumped out at us, per se, and so instead we had the idea to write a book. We have been very involved in a lot of project management type work as we do our day-to-day jobs, non-podcast related, but with the technology team there at the Synod offices, and we thought it was time perhaps to talk about project management for churches, schools, and other faith-based organizations.
It's definitely a question, or questions about it come up all the time. In fact, many topics on the podcast are really project management related. And when we say project management, we're not just talking about kind of the traditional project manager, project team. You know, we've got those who do this and those who do that. There are many kinds of projects within a church or school or organization. And they can be a challenge, and I think there are many good books out there about project management, but maybe none that fit this exact niche where we're talking about how to manage projects, how to be a part of a project team, whether they be little or big, within a church or school, a ministry. And so that's the niche we chose, and we're kicking that off today, and we've done some writing, and hopefully God will bless it, and everybody will benefit from it.
Yep, we had the idea that churches and schools are a tad bit different than just normal projects, and being able to address some of those nuances. One that jumps to mind right away is the fact that you depend a lot on volunteers in church and school settings, and that makes things a little different than the normal workplace project management or whatever. So I'm excited that we can address some of those niche kind of things that apply to faith-based organizations that maybe are a little bit different than the traditional project management. I think it'll be a good opportunity for us, also maybe a bit of a stretch, a good challenge for us to put this all together. And, you know, as we kind of brainstorm ideas about how to even get started, one of the things we thought of was our Wells Tech community, Martin, because they're always there for us, and we really learn so much from them. So our first idea right out of the gates was to survey our Wells Tech community and ask them, you know, some questions around project management and how they, what kind of stumbling blocks they maybe encounter in their church and school settings, what kind of areas they'd like to improve upon, that kind of thing. So, yeah, we put together a little survey and put it out there for the community.
We asked three questions, and we're going to share two of those with all of you this afternoon. The first question that kind of came to mind that we want to pick the brains of those people who were on the front line, so to speak, of project management within churches and schools is, why do projects get stuck? What's the number one reason why you start out with a project with all great intentions? Maybe you've done all the right things, but then you get going and then it just kind of stalls. It needs a, you know, a kick in the pants. It needs a reboot, whatever. Why does that happen? So that was the first question we threw out there. And fortunately, we had some great responses, so we thought, well, why don't we bring in at least one of those people who responded to the survey to talk about his answer, and that's Pastor Steve Daly from St. Paul in South Haven, Michigan. Thanks for coming on the show, Steve.
Glad to be here, Martin and Sally.
Yeah, it was great for you, first of all, to respond, then your willingness to jump on the show on pretty short notice. And your answers, we thought, were particularly insightful, so we said to ourselves, well, why don't we see if Steve could come on? He's a friend of the show. We saw Steve not too long ago at Wells Tech, and it was great to see you there. But how did you answer that, Steve? Why do projects get stuck, at least in your experience?
Well, I think my answer, Martin and Sally, kind of came from my unique experience. The Lord's given me quite a privilege in 16 years of ministry. I've served in four very different areas, all of them congregational ministry, but every congregation and every situation is just a little bit different. And I think my answers kind of came from that background of serving in four completely different places with completely different sets of talent and different sets of volunteers. And then I think the other part of my answer kind of came from maybe making a personal confession of my own. I think when you look at project management, especially when you're a pastor, the spiritual leader of a congregation, that sometimes we have to admit that, you know, there's some fault on our own side as well, that projects get a little stalled or delayed or not finished or come to completion. So that's kind of where both of my answers, because I had a two-part answer really for this first question. And the first part of it deals with delegation. I felt that there's one reason why projects get stuck is because there's a real lack of delegation that occurs. And this is probably personal confession time, but I've also seen this among the leaders of the congregation that I serve as well. You got this great idea. It really fits with your ministry. It really fits with the goals that you have for your ministry. All the church leaders feel that this is a project that can move your congregation forward, but you're going to need help to bring it to completion. And as leaders, we don't always gather the troops that we need. A lot of these projects, when you're using volunteers, it really takes a village instead of an individual to complete the work. And so you often have to recruit lots of people. And I'm sure this is not just true in the congregations I've served, but it's true throughout our synod. The old days of the sign-up sheet are just about dead, I think. And the only way to really get enough volunteers for a project is you really got to kind of tap people on the shoulder. You need to have a one-on-one conversation a lot of times. And Even though I think we admit that as leaders, we're often reluctant to do that. It takes time, and a lot of times we're already stressed with the amount of things on our plate, and so we don't take the time to delegate, and then a project gets delayed or stalled as a result of that. I've seen that personally, some great ideas, and I don't always tap shoulders as quickly as I should, but I've also seen it when I when we have a project that comes through like the church council or one of our boards or committees, I often encourage them, well, this isn't something that you can handle by yourselves. You really need to get help. And often what I see happen is those faithful saints of God, the leaders of the congregation, instead of tapping shoulders or talking one-on-one, they try a sign-up sheet, doesn't work real well, and then they just end up doing it themselves. Well, that ends up making the project last probably three times as long as it could have.
Right. There's probably a couple of dimensions, maybe three or four different angles you could take off of your answer. One is you have to know which shoulders to tap, right?
Yes.
You have to have some kind of idea of what the skill sets are and the inclination maybe that somebody would have to do it, maybe the passion that they would have for it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point, Martin, and that comes as we get to know people in the congregation. I'm rather new where I'm currently serving, so I'm not the best person to recruit people at this point in time, because
right.
The members who've been here for 20-plus years know each other far better than I know them.
Yeah. Second component to your answer would be you have to come with kind of a clear, this is what we want you to do, and that's not always what churches are good at either, with that beginning planning stage where you outline, here are the things that need to get done, and this is how long we might expect, here's the commitment necessary. So it comes across as kind of a nebulous, well, can you help us out, versus this is what we'd like you to do.
I can think of one project that we have in the hopper right now, Martin, that fits that description perfectly. We want to use some technology that we have here at St. Paul to kind of create a video directory of the members. I have a young person in the congregation, one of our teens actually, who's willing to do the project, but I got to get on the ball and hand it over and maybe even do a little screen share video that kind of outlines and lays it out. And so that's kind of delaying the project right now.
Right.
You know, I think one other aspect of it is just actually choosing the right projects. And that was something that also came through in your survey response, Pastor Daly. You know, soccer camps may be perfect for one congregation and not another. I think that was one example that you gave. Perhaps you can elaborate a little bit on that if you've got some experience there.
Yeah, I think that's a really great example. There, it's really important to look at the talent set of the congregation that you're in and your fellow brothers and sisters in Christ that surround you, and do pick ministry projects that you have the talent pool to complete. I can think of a number of congregations I've served. You take the soccer camp example. I can barely kick a soccer ball. I'm not the one to lead a soccer camp. And I look at the members, and we don't have a lot of people even interested in soccer. One town that I lived in, soccer was kind of the forgotten summer sport. They were really big into baseball and softball. That was their big thing in the community. I think if you did a soccer camp there, no one would have shown. If you did a baseball camp, that would have been perhaps more appealing to the community in which you're living in. So I think that's important too, that you pick ministry projects that are going to move your ministry forward in the area that you're at, and that you have the talent pool to support it. I remember one congregation I served, we had an incredible radio ministry. It was wonderful. I really had a lot of fun participating in it, getting the other members of the congregation involved in it. We had a lot of members that were involved. In fact, that ministry is still going strong today, thanks for the most part to the talented members who continued to do the work after I accepted a call away. But I've never been in another congregation where I thought that we should do the same thing, because we have different talent sets than the other congregations that I have served. And I think it's important that I don't force a great ministry idea that worked in one congregation where I served on this new congregation that maybe doesn't have the same talent set or interest.
That probably underscores the need for a complete ministry plan, so you understand why you're there and what the priorities are, and then what the projects are that would fit that particular ministry plan. It becomes a little bit easier. It becomes really hard though if you don't have that or don't have a good idea of, you know, what the umbrella is you're trying to fit under.
Yeah, I think you're making a great point there, Martin, that a full ministry plan, and I think that's a struggle for a lot of our congregations. Try to get a congregation or a church and school ministry to think about, well, where do you want to be in 5 years? That's
right.
a hard, hard thing to sell.
And what are the
hard stepping stones for a congregation to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Part of the survey, we also asked individually, you know, what you need to get better at to be a good project manager, and a lot of people, whether they know it or not, they need to have project management skills. I would say almost every pastor needs to have some project management skills. Principals, teachers, staff, ministers, lay leaders, those skills are really invaluable as you're talking about projects within the church. How did you answer that question when we asked, where are the gaps that you have in your project management system and your approach?
Well, I answered it in this way. I love managing different ministry projects. There's a lot of different things that I enjoy to do as far as the projects of a congregation. But I would really like to kind of step back and simplify things. I like to cut down on the number of projects that are going and that are on my plate, both personally and then as a congregation as well. And I'd like to simplify things so that we put more effort into just a few things so that we really do them to excellence. And I have one project in particular that I think would be, I have the talent set for, I believe, and I have a lot of ideas for, but I don't really have the time to do it right now. So I'd like to step back and simplify other areas, maybe push off some other projects that aren't nearly as important, and then focus on this other project that I'd like to take on.
I think that whole simplification thing, at least from the project leader's point of view, is really important, because oftentimes you do want to take on a whole lot because you know you have the skill set to get it done. And you might even enjoy doing it maybe more than what you should be doing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to be practical and to keep things simple. I think that's a great answer and an area we probably could all improve upon.
Well, and I think especially when you look at pastors, teachers, principals, many of us have a multitude of talents. The leaders of our congregations have a multitude of talents. The members of our congregations, and every congregation has that individual or that couple or even that small group of couples that seem to want to do everything. And they're talented. They could probably do everything. But wouldn't it be a benefit if they really worked on just one thing and did it really, really well and focused on that, and then we got other members involved in perhaps some of these other projects? Same is true for called workers as well. Wouldn't it be great if, I know that maybe you really love technology, but if you have members in the congregation that are also very good with technology, maybe hand some of those technology things over to the membership. Let them run with it. They probably won't do it exactly the way you would do it, but that's okay. Let them run with it, and then you can focus on something that you're specially trained for, teaching in the classroom, working with the parents of the students, writing sermons, focusing on good content in Bible study. And what a wonderful blessing that would be to the church's ministry, too, if our called workers are focused on some of the things they have special training for.
Yeah, that's all a part of stewardship, not only figuring out what your talents are, but what God wants you to be doing at this particular time in your particular ministry. So, Steve, I want to thank you so much for both responding to the survey, but also taking a little bit of time to share your responses, and blessings on your ministry there in South Haven. And we'll connect soon and see how things are going again. We appreciate you being a listener of the podcast and your contributions. Thanks so much.
You bet, Martin and Sally. I've been a listener from the beginning and really enjoy the Wells Tech podcast.
Very good. Awesome. Thanks, Steve. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good conversation, Sally. I knew Steve would have some really good thoughts, because I know that he is involved in a lot of areas of ministry, and his experiences serve us well, and there are nice additions to the book.
Absolutely. Speaking of the book, we've had an interesting few weeks as we contemplated how to write a book, not just what goes into it, but how to present it to our listeners so that they could read along, and, you know, what the final format, what our intentions are in that area as well. So, yep. Martin, you had some direction for us in that regard.
Well, I don't know if I had direction, but our longtime listeners will know that this is not the first book we've written. A year or two ago, we wrote an ebook, and it was all in digital format. I forget what the tool was that we used. At the end of the day, I wasn't overly impressed, and I thought, well, let's not do that again. It was kind of wiki.
With the tool.
What's that? Yeah, the tool.
You weren't overly impressed with the tool.
Right.
Uh-huh. The book was good.
The book was good, and we still recommend it. I was talking about content, building content for your online presence for your website and such. But the tool I wasn't overly impressed with. I thought it was a little immature and was free, so maybe that was part of the deal. But so this time we decided, well, let's use some advanced, some very current technology. And I had been very impressed with a product called Sway. And Sway is a Microsoft product. Sally, you have it up there on the screen. And it, what it does is it allows you to use mixed media. So you can have text, images, links, embedded video, and it'll mash it up for you in different kinds of styles and navigation schemes. So as you click a You throw things in, and Sally, now you have more experience than I do with it. What are your first impressions of using the tool?
It's very, very intuitive. I'm not logged in, so I can't really show the behind the scenes, but very intuitive to use, lots of different design options, and I think it came together in a pretty spiffy-looking output now that is very mobile-friendly. So it looks great on my desktop in the browser, but it also sizes automatically for whatever mobile device, tablet or smartphone, whatever it is. And, you know, we were a little concerned as we began to develop, well, maybe it's not the right platform because there's an awful lot of text we have to share. It's a book, after all, and we write a lot of text in books. But I have read it on my tablet and my iPhone and find the reading experience very pleasant. The font sizes and things are really easy to look at, and I think it's a great platform for what we're planning, and hopefully people will, you know, give us their feedback and let us know what they think about reading along in the Sway format. But ultimately it's also our goal to turn it into an actual book so that you could have a copy of the book, buy a copy of the book, perhaps even an audio copy at some point. But for now, chapter by chapter as we're writing, I think this is a great way to do it. I'm excited about it.
Yep. And so it'll be in two formats. So we are going to publish in some form a book, a traditional paper book, and we'll use maybe some of the online publishers. You know, Rob Gunther has shared, you know, his approach to that. I think there are lots of different ways to do that. So I'm actually looking forward to that process too, once we're done writing, is to see a finished product in that way, but also have this Sway component. I don't think Sway is made for book publishing, but I think we're making it work. So we're going to use, I think at least the beginning here, one chapter per Sway, so to speak. So Sway can be used for lots of different things, and it was my pick of the week a number of weeks ago, where I talked about the ability to use it for maybe annual reports, presentations, those kinds of things. So we'll do one Sway per chapter and kind of hook them together somehow with an index, and hopefully it'll all work. But the one thing I really like about it is the mobile friendliness. So you can view it on any device, and it really looks sharp. They've done a nice job with that.
Yeah, I was a little concerned that you can't bookmark your spot, but if I left it in my mobile browser where I was reading and came back to it in my mobile browser, it was still waiting for me in the spot where I'd left off. So I think that works well. We have set up a page. It's wellstech.wells.net/withallyourheart. That's the title of the book, and we will be posting links to each of the sways on this page. So you'll have one place that you can look to get access to each of the chapters of the book.
Yep. So you mentioned the title. The title comes from the first verse, basically the first few words of the book, and that's from Colossians 3, 23 and 24. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. And we pick that passage because Paul here offers kind of the definition of work, certainly work within the church, and that's really what a project is. It's a collection of tasks. It's a defined set of work that you do for the Lord and for your church. So we thought, well, let's just use the words Paul used, with all your heart, because that's really the definition that we need to follow when we're after that work. So why not?
I like the title, Martin, and I'm excited about the book. So to help us get started, like you said, we kind of frame things in terms of work in this introductory chapter, looking at the definition of work and that kind of thing, and then turning that into how it relates to a project. Once we've got that clear understanding, and we looked at different types of projects that happen in church and school settings.
Just a ton of them, right?
Yeah. That was a long list. It was easy for us to think through that because they happen all the time. That's what you pretty much spend your time doing in a church and school setting is projects constantly on the calendar and stuff. And so lots of opportunity to apply what we hope to share in the coming chapters of the book.
Yeah, and maybe the point should be made that projects don't always mean it's a group of people. A project can be just one person. You know, some of the examples we have here, like sermon, you know, writing a sermon series. That's predominantly the pastor who is doing that, but that's a project. It has pieces to it. It has distinct tasks that need to be done in a particular order, you know, that project management principles can be applied to just as easy as building a church, or figuring out what copy you want to purchase, or scheduling or planning Friendship Sunday, or a pastor-teacher appreciation, or a school field trip, or a PTO event. Or, you know, the list goes on and on. Some of those require small groups of people, some of them large groups of people, some of them individuals, but they all require some kind of methodology, some kind of approach to managing the work, and that's what we're calling or defining project management.
One of the things we've decided to include in each chapter, Martin, is kind of a specialized focus. So as we dig into different topics, we're hoping to include people just like Pastor Daly. He was our first project management focus person. And, you know, kind of tell a story of how people are dealing with different components of project management. And so, yeah, right here in chapter one, you're going to find information about what Pastor Daly just shared with us in our interview of him, because we want to, you know, have those stories interwoven with the tips and tools that we're going to share.
Yep. And we mentioned the survey that we took. So all of those results, which some of them were very interesting, are in the book. So we're kind of building this book together with our audience and other parts. So some of those challenges that Pastor Daly talked about were not unique to him. There were others who shared similar thoughts, but they range from, you know, no vision to maybe an over-reliance or under-reliance on systems, volunteers. One of them that I particularly like was trying to eat the elephant rather than creating manageable chunks, which I thought was an interesting way to put it. So you're trying to bite off more than you can chew rather than kind of divvy it up into small things that you can relate to, that you can communicate around, that you can have little victories over. Lots of things like that came through some of the survey results. And one of the neat things about building a digital book over time, and we're going to do this over 8 months, is we're going to keep adding to it. So if we hear other stumbling blocks or reasons that projects get stuck, we can add them into the book, and they'll ultimately wind up in the finished product.
That means we want to hear from our listeners, Martin, and so we encourage you to tell us about what your challenges are and, goals or personal ways that you'd like to improve in the area of project management, those first questions that we were asking this month.
Yep. So Sally and I'll plug away at this, and, I guess the encouragement would be dive in. Please read the book. Read the chapters as we go along. We'll publish them so that you can do that. Please offer comments, things we missed, things we got wrong. Again, there are all kinds of different experiences, and we'd like to include those in the book to touch as many people as possible. This book is really about trying to provide a good platform for people to have successful projects from. And I don't think Sally and I could do that by ourselves. In fact, I know we couldn't. So it's really important that you participate, and hopefully we've created a platform that would allow that to happen.
Should be an interesting journey, Martin. Who knows how it'll turn out?
So Sally, if they want to read the book, contribute to it, how would they do that?
That's that URL, wellstech.wells.net/withallyourheart. I think that's a good place to start. It's going to have links to both the individual chapters, the sways. Really great if you bring it up in a kind of a full screen mode or fill your browser window mode. It performs well that way. So
yeah, it's
grab
really
those
cool
links. Yeah. And then we'll also have links to each of our individual shows associated with each chapter. So if you want to go back and, hear the discussion that we had around the chapter, you'll have an easy link to that as well from that one spot, wellstech.wells.net/withallyourheart.
And what this will allow us to do is we'll probably snip out that interview we just did with Steve and plug it into the book. That's a cool technology that we can use with Sway. So. All right, let's move along in our little old agenda here, and we're back in the full swing of things, Sally. So we've got all of our segments put together here, so that means news and tech is next. And I found maybe three things worth sharing, so I'll go through these pretty quickly. Let me do a quick screen share. I think it's right here.
I'm seeing it.
There it is. I just got to get to the right tab. So big event number one, you probably have been living in a cave if you don't know about the fact that Apple is having another one of their big events. And it is in all likelihood going to be announcing new iPhones, the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus. Sounds like if rumors are true, that the iPhones will get a couple of additional features. So it's not a huge change in how it looks or how it acts, but the cameras might be better. Battery life may be a little bit longer. I heard that even the case is a little bit stronger, prevent some of that bending that was happening with the larger phones. Something called Force Touch that replicates what you can do on the watch. You just hold your finger down a little bit longer or press a little bit harder, and different things can happen. Maybe some things with the Apple TV. I've been a fan of the Apple TV, but they just haven't done much with it over the years. So it's about time that maybe they're going to get into that home automation game with the Apple TV, perhaps, and maybe talk to give voice commands to Siri, and she'll go and do things on the Apple TV. And finally, maybe an iPad Pro that they're talking about. The Pro is maybe something that's a little bit bigger, maybe comes with a keyboard, something made for a little bit more of content creation rather than content consumption. So that's all going to happen.
Competing with the Surface, huh?
Pardon me. Yeah, exactly. I think that's really what they're after here. So that's all coming up tomorrow. Depending on when you're listening to that, that's September 9th, Wednesday, 10 o'clock Pacific time. You can watch that live if you are available at noon Central, I guess that would be. So A couple other big announcements. Motorola not standing pat on their phones. I've really been a big fan of the Moto X. I've used that in the past. They launched a new phone. 2-day battery life. So they really fixed one of the big complaints I had with the Moto X, and that was battery life. And also the camera apparently is much improved. There are lots of neat features with the Moto X that I think people would get a lot out of. And you know, a couple of those include the ability to just pick up the phone and the screen will spring to life. Voice commands work really well on the Moto X. And customization, so you can have wood backs, you can have leather backs, plastic backs, all kinds of different colors. And at a fairly reasonable price, a lot less than the iPhone, for instance. So that was big news. And they also offered news about the launch of their relaunch or version 2 of their Moto 360 watch, which works really closely with that. And then the last thing I wanted to share news from the past week was Lenovo. We make some really good computers. It's the computer that I use day in and day out at work. Has put out a new tablet, and it really is almost a carbon copy of the Microsoft Surface. They call it the Mix 700, and you know, it looks almost exactly alike, down to the kickstand and the keyboard. One of the neat things about this, however, is that it's a bunch cheaper. It's, I think, $200 cheaper than the Microsoft Surface tablet. Plus, you get the keyboard. Microsoft's Surface does not come with the keyboard. That's an extra $125 or so. So this is all coming in November, I believe. So this would be something to maybe wait for if you're thinking about the Surface Pro, making a purchase there. You may want to see what this Lenovo product will do, because it may do the same thing or something maybe even better for a lower price. So just a heads up if you've been interested in what's going on in that space to make sure you're taking a look at that.
Now it's time for our Wells Now segment and my turn to share a screen. I'm over on the brand new Wells.net website, recently redesigned. And one of the things that we're featuring currently on the new releases area of videos is a Wells.net video tour. So if you haven't visited the new site, or if you've visited and would like to learn more about where things are located on the new site, we invite you to watch this video tour of the site. It's pretty short, and
you're going to recognize somebody's voice on that video.
Yes, you will. I had the privilege of recording that video, and hopefully it's going to be a help to you if you're looking for things on the site. Walks through all the fabulous menu options that are available on the new website. And again, we'll have a link in the show notes directly to this new releases area. Just look for the Wells.net video tour.
The site is really awesome. I love what they've done with the site, the design of the site, mobile friendly, lots of content. But that's always going to be the challenge too, to try and simplify but still get people right to the content that they need. And I think that's what the video does a great job at showing, that, you know, it does make sense when you think about it, but to have somebody to kind of hold you by the hand and walk you through some of the key areas really is helpful. So take a look at that introductory video, especially if you're having trouble finding stuff on the new site. Very good. Thanks, Sally, for both sharing that and doing the video. That's awesome.
You bet.
Now time for our picks of the week.
And this weekend, over the long holiday weekend, I had a chance to catch up on my reading a little bit. And recently, Church Mag had a podcast where they went over the top church tech blogs. So the first reason I looked at it was to see if Wells Tech made the list. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. we didn't, but that's maybe just because they were unaware.
So oversight,
we need to make them more aware. But they did give us a really lengthy list of 30 top church tech blogs. Some of them I'm familiar with, like Church Tech Today. We've interviewed Lauren Hunter from Church Tech Today on the podcast before. Certainly we've mentioned Church Mag and Church Marketing Sucks and probably a few of these others. But 30 is a pretty long list, and I thought, well, I'll start keeping tabs on a few more blogs. And to do that, I actually visited each of the 30 links, and I saved it over to my Feedly account. So if you aren't a Feedly user, this might be a good chance for you to do something similar so that now I can just come to my church tech category and read all the recent posts on all those different blogs all mashed up here together. And, you know, some of them may not fit with my way of thinking or theology or whatever it may be, but that doesn't mean I'm going to write them off completely. It's good to have them here, and they may put out something that would be a great use or something that I could share with our Wells Tech audience. And so nice to have them all rolled up here on Feedly, and that's pretty easy to do if you're a Feedly user. The thing that isn't easy to do, Martin, with Feedly is share that list with our listeners. I'd love to be able to just give you the link to the list I've put together, but that's actually a pro account use of Feedly. So unless I pay, $5 a month or something like that, I'm not able to share my list with others. It's just for my personal account. But right. I did find one on the list that was in Spanish, so I sent that over to Missionary Mike Hartman in case he found anything of use with the Spanish church tech blog that was called out. So something new for those that are interested in the church and technology space. Perhaps you want to find a new blog to follow. So that's my pick of the week.
Nice find. I've got to figure out. I'm really saddened by the kind of the plight of RSS. It used to be kind of the bread and butter of kind of our show, where we could look through RSS feeds and pick up interesting articles, share that kind of stuff. It just become a little bit more challenging. What I would probably do with that list, since I don't use a feed reader anymore, I would probably build a list in Twitter, because they probably all have Twitter accounts, and then build up, maybe a Flipboard or something that would pull from their Twitter feeds, hopefully get that same information. So, but that sounds really interesting. Maybe next year we'll get on that list.
There you go. Something to aspire for.
All right. My pick of the week is something for you Gmailers. And I think the what I'd like to do when we ever have these, once a month we're going to have these book shows where we talk about project management, and share a project management tip. And I'm going to start with the tip that I've shared before, but is really kind of at the top of my list, and that's the ability to create and use a waiting for list. And a waiting for list for me was one of those light bulb moments way back when I was reading Getting Things Done by David Allen, where he talked about the importance of creating a list called waiting for. And anytime you delegate or anytime you ask for something from somebody, you want to keep track of that so that you can revisit it and remind yourself, first of all, that you asked for it or that you delegated it, and secondly, to track whether it got done. And in Gmail, it's really easy to do that. So what I do when I email somebody a request or some kind of assignment, if that's the case, if they're capable of doing that, and I say, would you mind doing this for me? I will always carbon copy myself in the email, and then I've set up a rule in Gmail, and I also have one in Outlook, so that it stores it for me in a waiting for category. So let me show you how easy that is to do that. I'm just going to go into Settings, and I'm going to go into Filters, and I'm going to create a new filter. And in the From and To, I'm just going to type my information. So I'm going to type in my email address in the From and To fields. So if it's from me and to me, that's all I want you to watch for, Gmail. Whenever you see something from me and to me come into my inbox, create this filter. And then all I have to do is on the next screen, skip the inbox. That's the first one at the top, or it says archive it. And then apply a label. And in this case, I'm going to apply a waiting for label and then create the filter. So now whenever I email myself, basically on the carbon copy, it's going to see that come into my inbox and immediately tag it with waiting for, get it out of my inbox. And now when I regularly go through my checklist of things to do in my project management system or in my productivity system, I'll check that waiting for list. And as things get done, I'll delete those emails from that waiting for list because it's been taken care of. Or it'll remind me, hey, I've got to get back to that person and say, hey, remember last week or 2 weeks ago, I asked you about this or the other thing. Please don't forget about that. I need that information, or whatever it is. A huge weight kind of was lifted off of my shoulders when I figured out how to do that in a lot of different ways. I do that in Outlook, as I mentioned, so that I don't have to remember over and over and over again, did I ask somebody to do that? What did I ask them? When did I ask them? Who did I delegate that to? Especially when you're working with volunteers, this is a huge project management win, and you're going to see this obviously in the book once we get to that chapter on volunteers. But being able to track that waiting for a list, extremely important. So that is my both tip and pick of the week.
Great tip, Martin. I always think about like playing tennis. When I send it off to someone and I'm waiting for them, I volleyed it to them and it's out of my ballpark and I can quit worrying about it for a little while and wait for their response. But yeah, when you never get a response, that's a problem. So
that's a problem. Good. That's how projects get stuck, right?
Exactly. Wow, right. We got a book to write. Wow.
Yeah, I think we are building content as we go. Okay, let's go to our community feedback section. Who's talking to us, Sally?
First up, we had a couple of articles shared from our friend Jason Winjet. One from Church Mag, 6 Ways to Improve Your Church Bulletin. This is an interesting read, not a real long thing or anything, but some food for thought anyway. Define a clear goal as to what you're trying to communicate with your bulletin, and you know who the audience is with any type of communication. Are you appealing to the visitor, to the congregation, to your members? You know, what is it, or what parts of it are for each audience member or whatever? It says explain. I love that, because even though people have been there for 75 years and know everything there is to know about how you join the choir or how you donate flowers or whatever it may be, it's very much, very important to always explain processes, because there's always going to be new people or people that need to be reminded of the correct way to do things or protocols or whatever it may be. So they suggest spicing it up with some imagery, list and graphics, and even using some stories in your church bulletin. And then finally, they end with the suggestion to focus. Clear vision of what does and doesn't belong in the bulletin based on your target audience. So perhaps a short and good read for anyone out there who works with a church bulletin.
Very cool. I like it.
Next up, Jason shared an article from Church Tech Today, 4 ways you should be communicating about digital giving. And again, this is around your communication planning, and these are great tips. Have a launch Sunday, email announcements, a permanent place in the bulletin, and regular reminders. So, Martin, isn't there some marketing rule that if you want people to remember something, you got to tell it to them like 10 times or something before it'll begin to break through and help them to actually connect with it and remember?
It's,
and I think that's one of the shortcomings of a lot of our communications is, you know, well, I put it out on Facebook. Well, you know how Facebook is, things roll off really quickly, and whatever it is you're trying to communicate. But certainly these are some good tips around online giving that you could incorporate into a plan if you're looking to add that component to your church giving offerings. All right, then a couple that I tagged on DIGO. The first one is 10 essential social media tools for social media managers. And I haven't made it all the way through the list. It's a list from Hootsuite, but I think lots of good ideas here and links to different tools and things that you can make use of. Rank Speed, Hootsuite Syndicator, Bulk Scheduler, all of those kind of things make your life easier if you're trying to communicate with a lot of different social media channels. How about YouTube Analytics, which we know how great Google Analytics are. Look at your analytics on your YouTube videos to determine how many people are watching and things like that. Lots of options here to help you as you work with spreading the message through your different social media channels. So check it out. And then finally,
And I think maybe I skipped one in the process. I'm looking at my mind map and cross-referencing. Maybe I'll have that one in the next show. I also wanted to make mention that we're all familiar, and we've mentioned it many times on the podcast, that there's a Google Plus community called Wells Google Schools. New to Google Plus is a new community called Wells Office 365 Schools. And our friend Perry Lund, who teaches at Evergreen Lutheran High School, has set up this community. It's a growing community. I was here the other day and there weren't 21 members, so they're adding members all the time. I know that many, many schools are going the Google route, but Office 365 and all the different education options that they offer from Microsoft is certainly a very good competitor to the Google and perhaps better in many ways. So worth looking into, and here's a group of people that are willing to communicate about it and share your questions and tips and tricks and things with. So thanks, Perry, for setting that up and sharing it with us, and we'll keep tabs on it and report back to Wells Tech any interesting things that are going on in the Office 365 community.
Yeah, and Perry's really, I think, committed to this. You can tell he's got a lot of passion for it, and that's something that he lives and breathes every day. So that's, that's the first step. But a lot of good stuff there. And I would be one of those people who would say, yeah, if you haven't looked at Office 365, you know, in your school, you don't have to kind of follow everybody else into the Google waters, although there's nothing wrong with those, but there are some advantages to using an Office 365 product, which truly is very mature and well done. So thanks, Perry, for putting that together.
Very good. We had an infographic come across our desk this week, Martin. It was screaming to be pinned on Pinterest, so I did just that. You'll find this infographic on our Wells Tech Pinterest board, but worth a quick look as we scroll down, how to build a successful church website. And this is done by a company called Capterra. And interestingly, they broke it into the size of the congregation, calling 200 members or fewer a small church, over 200 a mid to large, and even a multi-church site. And for each of those different categories, they gave you a little bit of a layout, a suggested layout of what might be included on your homepage and some notes and things around that. And then they gave you a list of core functions as well as secondary functionalities that you might be interested in taking advantage of on a small church website. After that, they move on to that mid to large church and again give you kind of an overview of what a homepage could look like and different links and feature areas you might include. And then they expand the list of core functionalities that they'd expect a mid to large church to have: a calendar online, to have visibility with search engine optimization, social media, and a responsive layout, to have the ability to do online donations and potentially a member directory as well. And also you might consider having sermon archive, online event sign up, a church blog, and a church mobile app. And then finally, they do the same thing with the multi-site church. So these are kind of mega church locations or whatever, giving you even more expectations for those multi-site churches. So I thought this was a nice little guide. It gives you ideas of content that would be good for your church website, even if you're a mid to large and you want to start with the things they think are important at the small size. At least gives you a little bit of idea of how you might lay that out and include it on your church website.
Yeah, even if you're using templates like Final Web, it's sometimes hard to know where to start, what goes in those boxes, so to speak, on those mm-hmm. templates. And this is a good starter for that. It's definitely nice find.
And then finally, I mentioned it earlier in the show, and I'd like to mention one more time that we have a Wells Tech photo challenge going on. You can learn more at wellstech.wells.net/photo challenge. We've already gotten one entry for this month. Our challenge is school and Bible study, and someone submitted a playground, which I think would be an awesome picture to use on a school website. So lots of potential here for you to use these images as they are all royalty-free public domain images, and there's many, many here from our last month's appeal for outdoors and stained glass, but we need a lot more for this month school and Bible study images. So please do head on over to the website. We'll have a link in the show notes. It's also in the sidebar of the website. If you visit wellstech.wells.net and scroll down a little ways, there's the link there to submit images for our photo challenge. This is going to be going on for the next 11 months. So we hope to build up quite a collection of imagery for church and school usage.
Very good. Moving on to our ministry resources section, wanted to remind everybody that our interactive faith series is starting once again, and it starts tomorrow, Wednesday, September 9th. It's in the evening, I believe, 6 and 8 Central Time. It's offered two times. It's made for small groups to gather around or go to church together to do this, or in somebody's home, or you can do it individually. The topic for this series is Elisha, so it's a Bible study on Elisha, and it's being led by a Martin Luther College professor, Professor Keith Wessel. He has actually done this before, so he's very comfortable with the concept, and I think you really enjoy this study. So if you go to wells.net, you're going to find a link to the Interactive Faith series, but also you can go to livestream.com/interactivefaith to see all those sessions that are going to be lined up over the next, I think it's 5 or 6 weeks maybe. So you're not going to want to miss that. Tell your friends, maybe invite them over to watch this live. One of the advantages of watching it live is that you get to participate in the discussion, because this is him talking, but he also then pauses for interactive on-site conversation, but then you can also ask questions online. So you have an opportunity to participate in that way. So Interactive Faith on Elisha.
And just one more mention, Martin, that there is a study guide available already for this first session. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. You can download and follow along using the study guide as well.
Yep, very good. Sally, do we have a featured video this week?
We do, and it comes from an interesting project management article about keeping the marshmallow on top. What an odd title, but we added the marshmallow challenge video to our instructional playlist, because it might be one that you want to use with a team if you're trying some project management techniques with your team. Want to kind of figure out how the team works and encourage them to work together and things. The idea is that a team gets some spaghetti, some tape and a rope, and finally a marshmallow, and they're supposed to build the tallest tower they can, but always have the marshmallow on top at the end of the day. And this guy, Tom Wujek, was on TED Talk and kind of talked through the response that people typically get and how you can improve upon it and things like that, and the effect it might have on a team. So watch for that video embedded on our show notes page. He's a really interesting presenter, and there's a whole website around it, marshmallowchallenge.com. And also, he's done another TED Talk about drawing toast. So if you're compelled by marshmallows, you might be interested in his TED Talk on toast as well. So lots of fun stuff. We'll have the marshmallow on our show notes page.
You must like food. What do you think?
Yeah, making me hungry. This supper time.
Videos may make their way into the book as well. They are actually very good. So make sure you check those out. Sally, we're going to do this again next week, and we have a very special interview lined up once again. Alan Bunt, who was the winner of a Chromebook Pixel at the Wells Tech Conference, has agreed to join us, right? And
That's right. He's
going to share his experiences, give us maybe a little bit of a product review of that Chromebook, which I'm very excited to hear about, because that's a nice machine. And then maybe talk about some of his what he shared at the Wells Tech Conference. He led one of our sessions on MIDI keyboard, or MIDI, what did he share? MIDI something.
Yeah, I think they use a MIDI organ at One Good Shepherd in Wisconsin Rapids, right, where he's a member. And also, he's in charge of some audio video streaming and
That's great.
Kinds of things going on there.
Yeah,
so
very talented
looking
guy.
Forward to talking to Alan. He was a lot of fun to meet at Wells Tech Conference, and I'm sure he'll have a lot of interesting stories to tell us.
Yeah, so tune in next week for that conversation. Thank you, Sally, for contributing so much to the show. Wouldn't be the same without you, and I'm looking forward to doing it again next week. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.